to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Well, Suzanne Ingleton, you are really making the rounds there, aren't you, princess? I see you in the press everywhere. Oh, my God. I am yes. So proud of you. You got to hear my brains all about that.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty excited. I just had an article published in Thrive Global, which is a publication that's owned by Arianna Huffington, who is the co-founder of Huffington Post.
I know. I know her well. I follow her. Absolutely. I'm hoping she's following me here on the edge, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Well, well. I'm just so proud of you, and you won an award at the Seven Effect event there. Now, Brains, she's from South Australia. Let me tell you about my friend, okay? She is a former personal trainer. She specializes in weight loss. She knows NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and she also specializes in eating psychology coaching. So I'm hoping that she can give me a few tips to reprogram in my brain to get more disciplined, because I know that's my problem. I'm a snacker, you know, I'm a happy snacker, but it's starting to show, and it can really impact, you know, your life. Because again, on the spectrum, being an American Black woman, I'm on the spectrum of being obese. I don't think so, and nor does Mr. Magnificent, but I mean, the numbers don't lie. Right, Suzanne?
Yeah, no, that's right. Numbers don't lie. However, numbers can be a little bit distracting to your mind and your brain, and can actually cause more challenges than being helpful.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in the field of nutrition and physical training.
Yeah, okay. So it's an interesting background. It started in 2008. I had just been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
And I found myself lying on a metal slab in a hospital room, having a full body bone scan. And I realized at that moment, in fact, I just looked out to the side and there was this lovely picture, square window, it was a beautiful blue sunny day, and I could see trees and a bird flew by. And I just realized in that moment that my health had been taken away from me. You know, that sense of freedom and normalness was just gone. And in that moment, I realized that my health is the most important thing in my life, and it is my highest value, obviously. And I sort of made that decision then to be more present with how I treated my body. And it was on the last day of my radiotherapy treatment that I walked out of the hospital, and I just had this thought in my mind, and it just kept coming back. It just said, I have to give back. I have to give back. I have to give back. And I didn't know what that meant. It was really, it was random, and I just didn't know what that would involve. A few weeks later, I was with my oncologist, and he said to me at that time, the best way for you to beat this, Suzanne, is to be fit and healthy. And so it was in that moment also that I went home and I went, okay, what can I do to be fit and healthy? Because health was just, you know, so important to me. And I decided that I'd like to learn how to get fit and work in a gym. And from there, I studied to be a personal trainer. And so by training people to be fit and healthy, I was also helping them to be the fittest and healthiest versions of themselves,
right,
and able to let them know that their health is just so important. And that's where it all started.
You can have all the money in the world, you can be just as pretty as you want, but if you do not have your health, and that's mind, body, and spiritual health, you know,
it's
not just your, you know, your physical health. It's not just your bones and being flexible and doing yoga, Brains. You got to work your mind. You got to work your heart. So you started not only being a physical trainer, what got you into the modality of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming?
Yeah, so I had another bit of a life challenge, and I was really in a very depressed state. So I wanted to seek to help myself, and I came across a retreat, and they were doing energy healing, and I didn't know, you know, what that was about. But I soon quickly learned that energy healing and the body, this is part of the spiritual health that came to me, that I became a Reiki master and teacher. So I was teaching Reiki, and that was just incredibly helpful for my mind and my body. And from there, I became more interested in the mind and meditation. And it just kept flowing from there. So meditation, understanding that you can actually control your thoughts. You don't have to be the victim of these negative things that just keep, you know, looping inside your mind.
Well, we are the thinker of our thoughts.
We are, yes.
You know, we do have control over that. But so many people don't know where to begin. They don't know how to quiet the monkey mind. And I told a guest of mine about four or five guests ago was that I had to stop meditating. And I'll tell you why. Because I was getting these intense downloads. And with those intense downloads, it was requiring me to take action. And it was a lot of responsibility. COVID, my personal life, my business, my podcast, you know, being a good wife, trying to be a good mother, all of that, it was just too much for me. And so actually it was someone that I was talking to down in South Australia, Prue Blackmore. Do you know Prue?
No.
I want to meet her. She's super cool. But anyway, yeah. And you know what she was telling me? She says, you have permission to slow down. You have permission to ask the universe not to give it to you, you know, but in spoon-sized pieces that you can manage. I never thought about that. You know, I just thought about when I went into a meditative state that I was just supposed to be present. I didn't know that it was interactive, actually.
And there are so many different kinds and styles of meditation. And the simplest is just to be present with your breath. And that's the only thing to focus on. Always be present with your breath. And when your mind does wander off and just, you know, become distracted, it just come back to the breath, always the breath. And, you know, there are guided meditations, there are thinking meditations, there are the constructive, you know, meditations that the journey that you were going on. But it's always worth knowing that there are different types and styles depending on what you want to get out of it. But it was very powerful for me to know that we do have control over what is going on up here.
Absolutely.
And we've got input. We don't have to be controlled by it. And from there, I became a meditation teacher. So I've gone from, you know, personal trainer to Reiki master to meditation teacher, and learning more about the mind to eventually into hypnotherapy, and then, you know, working more on the language of the mind with neurolinguistics. And finally, my learning journey at this point has stopped with being an eating psychology coach. And that's where I specialize based on my background as a personal trainer, helping people to actually shift weight and lose it and let go of it sustainably, knowing that as a trainer, I couldn't understand why when they came to me, they were fit and healthy, but when they left, they'd put on their weight, you know, that they would revert back to where they were. And I just couldn't quite get that. But once I became aware and understood the power of the mind, I worked out quite quickly that the mind is actually the missing link. That is the missing ingredient to sustainability, and working through, you know, old emotions and thought patterns and behaviors and habits, and just really.
And that, again, it's a habit with me. It's like, you know, walk past the refrigerator. It used to be a habit with me when I would go out in the, you know, in the afternoon, I'd be going meeting a friend, always meeting at a restaurant.
Yeah.
You eat too much. You know, then you have a cocktail that's going to put, you know, some weight on you. Then you may have dessert. Then you have another meeting, and it's a dinner meeting. And then you get into the routine of every time you go out, you feel that you have to eat. So you have to, you know, change your programming. Now, my challenge is being disciplined. And like you said, What are some tools that I can use to just really kind of prepare myself and talk to myself with NLP to get more disciplined about, you know, being conscious of what I put in my mouth?
This is awareness and working out what your triggers are initially. So I do with my clients, I ask them to write out what they're eating every day. So, and their emotions, their movement, you know, what kind of food that they're eating. So I can have a look at that and to bring for the client to bring some awareness around it, then bring in some tools and strategies. Well, what can I do to change, you know, my triggers? What are my triggers? So once we understand that, once we've got awareness, we can seek to make a change. The other thing that I would suggest is really listening into your body, you know, having that sense of present moment awareness with your food. And rather than, and I find that a lot of people will begin to eat mindlessly just because it's there, because that, you know, the trigger is coming to play. So therefore there's the food and it just gets eaten. And generally on a, you know, quickly, but if we become fully present with our food and eat slowly and mindfully, and there's you know, a couple of benefits behind this, you begin to listen to your body. And it will tell you when you're full. And the trigger, you know, the normal reaction of the mind and the gut start to kick in once we listen to what's happening. And so that's...
You know what, you're absolutely right. Because a girlfriend of mine invited me and my daughter out for dinner, but it was for a mindful eating session.
Ah, wow.
And, you know, we had to chew each bite about 25 times before swallowing.
Yeah,
that was the longest dinner ever, but chewed the food till it was almost liquefied.
Yeah,
slowed down the process.
Yeah,
and it also helped with the digestion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you pay more attention to. It's like when I go with my African friends, we eat family style. You know, big bowl of food, and everybody eats, but you seem to eat less because you just, you know, you eat as you need it, not because there's 2 cups or 2.5 cups of potatoes. You feel that, you know, and we were always taught, clean your plate. Don't get up until you've cleaned your plate.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of psychology and conditioning of the mind based on how you were brought up and how your families were brought up. So, you know, your parents and their parents and, or, you know, right back down the line. So the psychology of the mind, you know, says, okay, we're, you know, with a group of people, we need to eat. This is the situation that we need to eat. Mm-hmm. We also tend to, when we're eating fast, we're not listening to the signals. And the body, the psychology of the mind actually says it doesn't, well, actually it doesn't recognize that you've had food if you eat too quickly. So the old adage, it takes 20 minutes for the mind to register that the gut is full, is absolutely true. And this is why slowing down, your mind then registers, okay, I've had enough to eat. It also says to you, there's this little process going on called the cephalic brain response. And what that's doing is looking to see whether or not you've actually had a meal, i.e. slowing down. It also wants to know that you've actually experienced the meal. Have you tasted it? Have you had the pleasure of it? Have you noticed the textures and the aromas and the different flavors? And chewing the food, the body then goes, okay, I've actually had enough to eat now. And you can then stop eating when you're listening to the signals of your body. So, but if you eat too quickly and only chew it a couple of times, then the body goes, your mind goes, uh-oh, no food here, I'm still hungry. Let's get some more.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to focus on that more. But you know what I also do? I used to drink, and sometimes I still do drink my calories, not alcohol brains. But, you know, liquid drinks, refills, you know, and when you go to the convenience store, I never did this too much, but instead of getting 16 ounces, they get the 32-ounce big gulp. And then they go and get a refill of that. And these syrupy foods, drinks and soda pops. You know, I had a soda pop, a big 2-liter bottle, and I drank the whole thing up. I was bloated. I mean, it felt like somebody put an air hose in me. I could not believe, because I had stopped drinking soda. I can't believe how much liquefied drinks can put weight on you. It's the sugar.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the sugar. And as soon as your body has sugar, it wants more sugar. Sugar is such a quick energy fix that the body goes, yeah, I want more, more, more. And, you know, then the addiction kicks in. But also the psychology of the mind is such that we will seek pleasure to avoid pain. And sugar is a pleasurable thing. And we've got more, you know, sweet taste buds than other. So if your body is feeling deprived of anything, it's not getting enough food, it will always go sugar, 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 because that is the quickest hit it will get.
Wow.
And so once you start, you want more and more and more.
It's a sweet poison. Absolutely.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So getting off sugar is a little bit of a process, but it doesn't take long. I'm working with a client at the moment who had a lot of sugar in her diet. And the first day, or the second day, actually, after our appointment, she sent me an email and contacted me. And she said, oh, I've just got these terrible sugar headaches. Mm-hmm. And because I'd asked her to, you know, begin to let go of sugar. So this is what we discussed in our initial session, is for her to make sure she's having enough protein in her diet, like in what she's eating, whether that be plant or animal-based, but also making sure she's got enough healthy fats. Those two things combined will start to limit the sugar cravings. Mm. So part of what I work with my clients is to teach them the importance and show them how to have enough protein, enough healthy carbohydrates, which includes vegetables and fruit, and healthy fats in every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So therefore the mind is going, okay, I'm getting enough nutrition. If it thinks it's not getting enough nutrition, it goes, I want more, I want more, I want more. What can I have? Sugar, 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 because that's the quickest and easiest. So
wow.
this is what's happening.
So what do you feel about meat? You know, and I'll say it, meat has changed considerably. And I'm one for a good steak. I go to the butcher shop where it is corn fed, and yes, it's more expensive, but if I'm going to consume it, I might as well consume it. But then I look at my daughter, who has extracted meat from her diet, and she really feels more energetic. Her eyes are a lot brighter. She says her elimination process is a lot easier. Then I look at my mother, who's 91, and now she just really has no appetite. But when I serve her a meat product, she can't even chew it. She doesn't like the taste. She doesn't like the smell, anything, but more plant-based. So the body really craves plant-based. But what's your thoughts around consuming a lot of meat? Any kind of meat, beef, pork, lamb?
Yeah, I think everybody is different. We all have different body. We all have different bodies. We all have different physiology. So some people prefer meat and some people don't. We also go through different ages and stages in our life. And so, you know, like with your mum at her age, then her body has different nutritional requirements, and it could just be personal preference. And I know my mum went through the same, you know, did the same. She went, no, I'm not having meat. It just makes me feel yuck. And then now she's gone plant, and then she went back to meat. So it really, what I work with is for people to be their own curious scientists about how their body reacts. So looking at food in a holistic way, but going, okay, does my body like this? And do I like this?
Right.
Rather than stick to a particular way of eating, because it might suit in the short term, but in the longer term, it might not suit. But it's just being open to listening to how your body's reacting. Yes, this feels good for me. But also I teach that always buy the best quality you can afford. So, yes, getting grass-fed beef. If you like grass-fed meat, then have that. It's much better for your body. If you like organic vegetables, get that. But if you can't afford organic vegetables, go for farmer's market. You know, when it's fresh, reduce.
Well, I think that is such an oxymoron. Is that we consume meat, and the meat consumes produce? Cows don't eat meat, you know, they eat grass, they eat hay, they eat straw, you know. Yes. So it's strange, but the food has really changed. I mean, you know, the taste of dairy and butter and all of that from when we were a child. We used to have the fresh milk truck come and deliver the milk, you know. Yes. It would last more than 3 or 4 days, and the butter just would, you could just put butter on a piece of bread and be happy.
Yes. But
everything has changed. Everything is processed. So what I'm really trying to do is, you know, go back to the basics. I cook fresh vegetables. I love that. I've got a little garden in the backyard. So what, give me a couple tips that you would give a person that's really ready to embark on this journey. What would be the first thing that they should do? Is that journaling what they're actually consuming?
Well, the first thing I ask them to look at what they're consuming and improve the quality of it. That's first and foremost. So looking at processed as compared to fresh, or getting the best version, the best quality that they can afford. So for instance, if it is fast food and that's all that, you know, that they can afford, I will go, all right, if you're going to Macca's and getting, you know, a bun, a burger, get the salad option instead. So, you know, if you're buying mainly processed foods, shop around the outside of the supermarket. It's baby steps, because remember, we don't want to make too huge a change, but I want to bring awareness to people. So the first thing is to upgrade the quality of their food to whatever they can afford. The second one is to slow down their eating, so they've got some awareness of what they're, of how much they're eating, and be present, like get away from the TV, sit down with the family, chew your food more than 3 times, because yes, that aids in the digestive process, but the cephalic brain response, whatever your mind is telling you, once you slow down, you're going to reduce your portion sizes. So there are a couple. I would also suggest that, you know, they drink more water, which is going to, you know, help to flush through the digestive system and toxins.
So what do you think about, you know, people doing regular cleanses? What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, look, there's nothing wrong with a regular cleanse. And in fact, the body does like a regular cleanse. They say, some will say every 5 to 7 days, some will say, you know, once a month, but not for a long period of time. You know, there are people that will do cleanses for a long, long time, and that's fine for their body.
Right.
And if they're used to doing that, once again, it's being the curious scientist. How does my body react? I know my son did a cleanse and he just couldn't stand it. And he just went, oh my God, I'm so hungry. And, you know, but his purpose might have been a little bit different. I know people have done cleanses, you know, specifically for a medical purpose, or they might have done it to lose weight, but it's not sustainable. But it is great to give your body that rest that it needs. So once again, everyone's an individual. Try it out, see if you like it. But yes, the body does respond really well to cleanses.
And one last thing, what do you feel about these intermediate fasting? Some people say 8, some people say 12. I had one guest on my show that did it 16. You know, I go 16 hours without eating, I get kind of fainty. So between 8 and 12, what's your position on that? And do you really think that that has an impact on the digestion and feeling better?
I think intermittent fasting does give your digestive system a bit of a rest. However, for people that are coming to me to lose weight, I don't suggest it. If they're doing that generally, they're doing it to reduce their calorie intake. If the body's caloric intake is reduced too much, it just goes into automatic starvation response.
Mm.
So what that means, it's a stress on the body, and it will begin to hang on to fat, not build muscle, and create more fat. So it works in the opposite. I've had people that have been on intermittent fasting, or just having the keto bullet coffees, and then restricting the rest of their diet, what they're eating, and they're still putting on weight, even though they're eating less calories. And this is the problem. The body's not getting enough of what it needs. So once again, every body is different. Try it out. If you're not losing weight within a week or two of being on an intermittent fast, change it. Do something different. Be the curious scientist and work out, try another way and see if that works.
And if it's not working, Brains, what I want you to do is I want you to contact Suzanne.
Yes.
Because she's going to go with you step by step. She's going to hold your hand. She's going to support you. She's going to encourage you. She's not going to yell at you and discipline you, because you have to want this. Ultimately, yes. This is something that you're going to have to want, because she's going to be fine and fit. I mean, look how she's recovered. And we're still going to be fat and fluffy because we don't want to make the investment in ourselves. So thank you so much for being here on the edge with us, Suzanne Ingleton from South Australia. I think you are a queen. I'm so proud of you. Let me see your awards that you won.
I've got this one from the Seven Effect, who is my amazing business coach, Jody Nevitt. This one was for systems, putting systems in place for my business. Wow. And I've got three little other nomination awards. So these are all for different little things that I have done in regards to, you know, creating a business, a successful, sustainable business. So that's been pretty awesome too, to be recognized for the work that I'm doing with people and
to build. Cheers. Here's to you. I love to see a woman in business thriving. I love to see a woman that's able to edit and filter and know how to shift and feel comfortable. And that's the kind of person that you want to work with, Brains. You want to work with someone that is patient, that's empathetic, that doesn't just look at your waist size, but looks at your heart size. Tell my Brains how to get in contact with you, Suzanne.
Yes, I have a website, which is www.yourinnercalmcoach.com. So there are contact forms on there. I'd love to chat. And very easy to get in contact with me. I work with people all over Australia, and you know, with this amazing medium of Zoom, I can work with people all over the world. So distance is not a barrier. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I'd love for you to hear from her too. Brains, go. I'm going to put down at the bottom and at the end of the video all of Suzanne's information. This is the place where we provide you information, we provide you options, we provide you support, love, because we care about you. Isn't that right, Suzanne?
Absolutely, absolutely. Heartfelt.
All right. Brains, take care of yourself, okay? Bye.